Popcorn Junkies. We are reviewing a new Nick Cage film called Dream Scenario. I don't know if you remember, the trailer was a man who repeatedly appears in a very sort of undramatic fashion to begin with in everyone's dreams and goes on to become something of a viral sensation, a literal social media sensation. So Dream Scenario, this is the latest sort of chapter in what I'm calling the sort of renaissance of Nick Cage, the Cage-naissance of Nick Cage, who has sort of launched himself back at us with a sort of ever-expanding, bizarre sort of body of work that, you know, sometimes doesn't hit, but more often than not does. And he's managed to prolong this, and he's managed to achieve what I think is the impossible with some of the choices that he's made. I'm thinking of films like Mandy, I'm thinking Color Out of Space, I'm thinking The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent. Obviously, in The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, he was playing himself, and in a weird way, I would argue that even in this film, Dream Scenario, he's sort of playing himself. I mean, Nick Cage always plays himself. I know Nadia, my wife, she always says, you know, wow, you're always getting the same sort of Nick Cage. Well, you know what? That's my guilty pleasure. I think one of his sort of mishits was perhaps the recent Renfield, in which he played Dracula, although I think he was probably the best thing in it. The most notable sort of, if you like, crossover indie performance where I think he really showed his kind of acting chops, or showed them to good measure, was Pig. Which I've talked about before, and we've done a review of on the channel. So anyway, this is his new film. This is Dream Scenario, and it's directed. It is an interesting director. If you're a follower of the channel, you'll know of a film that we reviewed called Sick of Myself, which was a sort of pastiche. A curious pastiche about a woman who sort of wanted to be the centre of attention. It was about a sort of portrait of narcissism, about a woman who was sort of lived alongside her more successful artist boyfriend and went to ever more ludicrously gorish body horror-esque lengths to become the centre of attention. One of those classic, I don't care if it's the worst kind of attention, pity me, find me excruciatingly, sort of humiliatingly pathetic, but as long as it's attention, I don't mind what lengths I go to get it. And this is a film about something not entirely dissimilar. This is about a professor, Paul Matthews. Professor Paul Matthews is played by Nick Cage. He's a professor in sort of the biology of zebras, how zebras sort of, I can't remember, sort of stand out or don't stand out from a crowd, from the herd, and all that kind of thing, which is kind of symbolic because really, even in his subject, what he's interested in is in the invisibility of being an ordinary person. And I think this film is an interesting kind of exploration of masculinity. I think whereas his first film, Christopher Borgli's first film, was very much about narcissism, in the narcissistic age, and the lengths to which people will go to in order to be sort of recognised or concentrated on or prioritised or given attention to just for the sake of it. This too is about someone who has his qualities. He has his expertise. He is incredibly niche. It's incredibly rarefied. I think it's kind of funny and amusing and apt that it's parked within the world of academia, because one can argue that so much sort of rigour and intellect and achievement and thought and analysis and skill can go into so many areas of academic thought and academic sort of pursuits. But to what end? Merely to be a sort of name within the academic world. And I think this is a film also about, interestingly, about academia in a weird way, the sort of celebrity or not of academia. So he's a professor, but he hasn't had a publishing deal. He wants to have written a book. He has ex-colleagues who are younger than him, who happen to be women. Not that he makes a big deal of that, but younger than him, who have successfully published. They've written books about ideas that he feels they may have even taken his idea. And there's a very sort of funny exchange between him and a former colleague or student or someone that he worked with, where he's like, you've got a book deal. And he gets really cross about the fact that the idea underpinning her book was in fact something that he's studied, talked about, etc. Whenever people push back at him and say, well, have you started your book? And he's like, no, I'm going to start my book. So that's who he is. So he's an ordinary, invisible man. He happens to be in academia, but I also think this is a film that relates to or is interested in and speaks to the idea of being a man of a certain age, in your 50s, 60s, and the invisibility of it. I think we often, I think a film like Ali and Ava was a really compelling and emotional and clever film about the invisibility of being a woman of a certain age, and the idea that perhaps you won't find love again. This is a film about being a man of a certain age, having absolutely nothing that's notable about you, but you've curated your life. You have a wife, played brilliantly in this by Julianne Nicholson. She's fantastic. You've got children. His two kids are sort of a bit po-faced and a bit, two daughters that kind of like, you know, they don't really have any respect or any time for him. I think it's purposeful that he's bald and he's generic and he's average and he's unattractive and he's just not good looking. So it's the invisibility of being an ordinary man. And so what does this film then do? Well, he starts popping up in everyone's dreams, but he doesn't. What I think is very funny is he starts popping up quite literally in everyone's dreams. And the film takes its time to kind of, you know, his students, his colleagues, people he meets in, you know, in the theatre, ex-girlfriends, ex-partners, what have you. They're all kind of snagged by the fact that he pops up in their dreams. But what's funny is even in these dreams, he's not doing anything. And he keeps sort of probing and questioning people and saying to them, what am I doing in those dreams? And they're like, you're just there. You're just in the background. You just walk past. You just don't do anything. Which in and of itself is a really neat way to then send up the idea of what constitutes in this day and age someone becoming famous or notable or viral. And this becomes a film about being viral. So what happens is, obviously, he appears in more dreams, he appears in more dreams, and suddenly it captures the imagination of the media, it captures the imagination of social media. He becomes notorious, he becomes famous, but what is he famous for? And this is very clever what this film does, because you could think, well, it's not a particularly sophisticated or complicated thought through idea that he just appears in a dream. But the fact that he just appears in a dream is exactly it. He does nothing notable, but also even the notable thing that is notable, which is him appearing in everyone's dreams and doing nothing, is nothing he's done. He's not had to achieve this. It's not because he's good at this or good at that. It's not because he had an idea. It's not even because there's anything particularly arresting about his personality. And so his fame starts to mushroom around the fact that ostensibly he's famous for just being in everyone's dreams. And so people aren't even interested in him. They're interested in the idea that he was in their dream in a non-notable fashion, which really sort of starts to nibble into and dig into the vacuity and emptiness and vacuum-like sort of quality of not everyone's, but, you know, a lot of people's kind of moment in the sun, if you like, the idea that you can become well-known and renowned and idolised and found interesting or just become viral. And it's about nothing to do with you. It's more about all the people finding you a sort of something to be of interest. It's everyone who makes you viral that's interesting rather than actually you, because you've actually achieved nothing. And so the film sort of twists and turns. He kind of likes it. It tickles his ego. He suddenly feels that he might be someone. Suddenly he's a bit of a celebrity. You know, then one of his students says, what's it like to be viral? You can see him in his own sort of uncool sort of academic fashion, kind of trying to get hip with it, failing miserably. You know, he isn't cut out for fame. He isn't cut out for viral or anything like that. And then we have this one particularly awkward scene where he is called into this sort of, if you like, social media agency that wants to kind of take advantage of it. They want to make money out of him. They want to sell him. He's like the most famous man on the planet, as they say. I think it's Michael Cera, the wonderful guy who played Barbie's friend. Brilliant actor, very funny. You know, they're pitching to him and he's like, we can get you millions if you become the face of Sprite and all this kind of stuff. And Nick Cage is sitting there kind of going, yeah, but what about my book? And they're like, well, what's your book about? He's like, it's about the invisibility of zebras and how they stay within the herd. And they're like, well, what about Sprite? And so he doesn't get the trade-off. And then he begins to realise it's an empty kind of fame. And at the point that there's an empty kind of fame, his appearance and presence in dreams becomes a little bit more. And they're clearly riffing on the idea of Freddy Krueger here. Obviously, Freddy Krueger, A Nightmare on Elm Street, he comes to you in your dreams. I thought they could have had a bit of fun with the candy-coloured clown they call the Sandman. I thought that could have been in there. This is obviously riffing. There's another movie called Zelig by Woody Allen, in which this sort of this totally inconsequential character just appears or is in the background of countless incredibly important photographs of sort of emblematic moments, serious moments in history. You know, there's a photograph of Gandhi, there's Zelig, he's there. You know, so this idea is that this guy, through no achievement of his own, not even for the thing that he values the most, and that's what's most tragic about this portrait, is he's getting adulation, he's getting adoration, he's become famous, but not for the thing that he wants to be famous for. And even there's a really sort of neat and horrible sort of twisted sort of dark kind of gag right at the end of the film where, you know, when he does manage to get a tiny book published and virtually no one is interested and all this kind of stuff, it's called I Am Your Nightmare, because that's what he becomes for so many people. He starts to traumatise people, he starts to attack people, he starts to assault people, I think sexually assault people. You know, what happens in his dreams is savage, and so you feel in him the effect of cancellation. So you you've got the making of a viral superstar, and then you've got the cancellation of that sort of celebrity or superstar, if you like. And it's just, it's a curious, it's comedic, it's funny, it's witty, but it is also a horror story. It's a salutary sort of horror story. And I think at the centre of this, Nick Cage is incredibly nuanced, actually. It's one of his more new, I mean, I was expecting him to go a bit crazier in some of the dream sequences. And I'd be lying if I didn't come out thinking, oh, I could have done with a bit more kind of crazy Nick. But actually, it's a much more kind of layered performance, and it really is a portrait of a man of a certain age representing a man of a certain age and men of a certain age who feel the sense of invisibility. What are they going to be notable for? What's the impact they're going to have? What sort of impact are they going to have had? And you know, what you realize is that the most important impact is on family. And so, you know, the situation with his wife starts to sort of morph and become estranged. His relationship with his daughters was estranged anyway, though they had a moment where suddenly it was the best thing since sliced bread, because everyone they knew were like, oh, God, Dad, man, everyone's kind of wanting a slice of the action. You're famous, but what am I famous for? Asks Nick Cage. Not a lot. And so you have these tragic moments where he's doing photo shoots towards the end, where he's got like a Freddy Krueger hand and he's posing and all this kind of stuff. There's one particularly awkward, deeply uncomfortable scene where, in fact, it's one of the women at the social media agency, one of the young assistants, she sort of is enamoured with him because in her dreams, she has sex with him. It's one of the unusual, she's one of the unusual people for whom, you know, he does something else in her dream. And he sort of appears out of the shadows. He's quite sort of oppressive and he's quite sort of forceful and he has sex with her and all that kind of stuff. And she insists that he actually reenacts this. And we have this most excruciatingly embarrassing scene, spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen it, where, you know, she kind of encourages him to get sexual, he starts to get aroused and farts. And popping a fart in the middle of any kind of arousal scene when you're as kind of old and middle-aged and unattractive, essentially, as he is physically, it was quite a wincing, difficult moment to watch. So, you know, I was getting all sorts of kind of feelings of kind of things like Being John Malkovich. I was getting feelings like The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. I was even getting moments where it felt like Everything Everywhere All at Once, with some of the kind of dream, you know, we cut hard into dream sequences where stuff would erupt and things would kind of smash up and you wouldn't know exactly what was coming in. Julianne Nicholson was really good as his wife. If there was any problem I had with it, I felt it could have got darker, and I think it could have explored the complexities of what it meant for him as a man to be sort of, I mean, it does, but it doesn't do it in any sort of nuanced way. You know, the idea of him sort of not having achieved what he wanted to achieve. And, you know, and the film kind of ends quite sort of abruptly in a sense, where you sort of, you know, his life has changed and you're sort of left thinking, well, what next? Like, it was quite, I thought it was quite a weak add-on at the end, where you had a sort of Fitbit-like sort of dream catcher, where you could float and surf and enter people's dreams. And it was credited back to Nick Cage being the first one who did that. I didn't think it needed that context. I didn't think it needed that sort of AI kind of almost sci-fi tech element bolted on at the end of it. So if anything, this is a film that really kind of, you know, takes as its target sort of, you know, this director's clearly interested in the whole idea of fame, how it intersects with narcissism, how it intersects with what fame does to you and what you want from that fame. I think it's interesting to note that, you know, Nick Cage's character's kind of fate, if you like, or his appearances or the nature of his fame, if you like, starts to shift at the point that he wants to use it for some other thing. And you I think Nick Cage does a really good job, actually, at the point where he sort of is driving a hard bargain for his book to be published. Because I was sitting there in that scene where the deal was being brokered, and it was kind of, that was the Faustian moment. You know, he wanted to be recognized for the thing that he believed in and thought he was best at, which was his academic research. And really all they wanted from him was the fact that he appears in people's dreams and does nothing, but that in itself means that they could all make lots of money. And when he was pushing back on that, I actually got a little bit kind of even annoyed with him, thinking, look, this isn't what this is about, so just be realistic. And so it kind of encouraged you to sort of think about all those things, you know, that he might have wanted. The ego, where the ego kicks in, and the ego wants fame and notoriety and viral kind of sensationhood, if you like, for all the right reasons. But actually, you can't pick and choose. You can't curate the reason for viral success. And I think that's something that's really interesting in this modern age. You can't. I mean, the amount of people, everyone tries to, they think, oh, what can we do? Or what can we make? Or what can we say? Or what skit can we do that's going to go viral? And this might change everyone's idea of me and all this kind of stuff. It's a huge sort of addictive kind of hunt. But actually what makes viral is not searching for it, not pursuing it. And what's interesting in this film is that at the point that he tries to take control of that thing, it all starts to backfire, right down to how he even appears in people's dreams. So it's a really interesting, different, novel, curious, inventive, sometimes funny, slightly sinister portrait of fame and narcissism and the invisibility. And what I liked about this slightly more than I think in Sick of Myself was the idea that this was actually parked within a middle-aged man, because understandably, white male privilege, why would we be interested? But you know, Nick Cage played it really well. He didn't go, it wasn't too... He didn't feel too sorry for himself. We didn't feel too sorry for him. He was kind of repulsive with the farting scene. He was a bit of a turn-off. There was a lot of ick around him. I didn't wholly disagree with the fact that Julianne Nicholson left him. I also didn't wholly disagree, though I didn't like his daughters, with the fact that they didn't hold him in particularly high regard. So I think this is an interesting film. It's one of those films that might slip through, come off the cinemas. If you see it to stream, check it out. It's interesting. And if you're not a fan of Nick Cage's extremities and his extreme performances, you don't actually get too much of that in here. There are a couple of moments in some of the dream sequences, but he's not just batshit crazy for the sake of batshit crazy. So yeah, it's quite a thought-provoking film and of now. I mean, this and the director's first film, Sick of Myself, two really interesting commentaries on our viral era, if you like. If I was to score this film, I'd probably give it about 80 out of 100. It's a really enjoyable watch.